heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Is I want you to take a ride with me, a plane ride. Let's look at this as a plane ride. We'll fly at about 35,000 feet, okay? Agree? We'll get to Moscow, we'll get to Tehran, and we'll get to Beijing. How's that? We won't land in any of these cities, but what we'll do is we'll hover down between 5,000, 10,000 feet at times and take a look at those markets, those countries, and see what really is the biggest threat. Well, on the show today is two of my favorites, actually. Both of these guys, first of all, IQ Alverzulli and Dennis Santiago, they're both great analysts. They're commentators. They have a sense of what's going on around the world. And they're just terrific voices to have on the program here. IQ's author of Lifting the Veil. He's an Iraqi-born Arabic speaker. And certainly, as you probably know, if you read all of his write-ins, you'll catch his articles, columns on the platform every Monday, in fact. He's one of the foremost authorities in the world on the subjects of Islam and a lot around that, friends. Dennis Santiago is here as well. Dennis focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. As you know, again, his write-ins, you'll see really at the end of every week, about Friday, Saturday, you'll see his write-ins out there. And he's got a lot to say as well. And welcome to the show, gentlemen, both of you here. So let's do this flight here. I don't know that we're in first class, gentlemen, but we'll put ourselves, probably get a better shot at know what's going on if we sit and coach a minute. So maybe you'll sit and coach with me a little bit, huh? Don't want to get you too comfortable now, right?
I'll do, coach.
Well, today you will here because we're going to talk to we the people. So let me give you a focus on these three markets a moment. Let's start here and let's get through Russia first. And now Russia is one of the few countries with a negative growth rate. Its 2019 population, by the way, is estimated at about just over 145 million people there. And that's a decline from a population of about 146.3 just a couple of years ago. So they actually are having less people. That tells you something there. And we'll put that into perspective with the other markets in just a bit here, you know. Again, this has been put out there. He's the big, bad boogeyman here. And that we have nothing in common and we can't get along with Russia. Dennis, let's start with you on this here. And you've both written some interesting pieces, and you had a really interesting piece recently here, in fact, about Mikhail Gorbachev worrying that the atmosphere is all wrong. We celebrated the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And that was a moment of time for sure. But why do you think Gorbachev comes out and says the atmosphere is all wrong?
Well, he's worried. He's worried that Russia is, again, ascendant in its growth of reliance on nuclear weapons as part of its international policymaking. And, he spent his life basically trying to get rid of that. So the guy's 88 years old or something like that now. So, you know, this is an old man looking back on what's happened in the world, and he doesn't like what he sees. He sees all of the old problems that plagued the Cold War beginning to resurge, not between the U.S. and Russia, by the way, but it's really between Russia and Western Europe in this battle that they now have over intermediate range weapon systems. That really is because of a difference of opinion about what happens to Eastern Europe and the pieces of what used to be the former Soviet Union. The Europeans have one idea and the Russians have another. And there is nothing more dangerous on this planet than Europeans with sticks. I mean, that's had a long history of things going wrong.
You know, there's been a lot of news on the fronts of the treaties cutting back, the United States pulling out and Russia, and then there's been a bill. I want to talk about a little bit of that today as well. But interestingly, let me put this at your IQ here a moment and say this. In a recent article I was just reading on Putin, the United States has said it has no immediate imminent plans to deploy new land-based missiles in Europe. Putin says Russia remains open to talks with the United States aimed at restoring trust and strengthening international security. I think a big question a lot of people are wondering, have on their mind is, how do we restore trust, do you think, IQ, and strengthen international security since we've made a mockery, the politicians had, out of Russia-U.S. relations?
Well, as you said correctly, it was the politicians, especially under Obama. I despise this guy, Obama, because he has caused more dangers, more dissension in the United States of America, more damage to America's fabric than 70 years of the Soviet Union. 10 or 11 years ago, I said on several radio programs in the United States of America that Putin is not the Soviet Union. Putin is a Christian, born again Christian, if you want to call him. Greek, Russian Orthodox, but nonetheless, whether he believes in God or not is irrelevant. He goes to church. His mother taught him to go to church. People don't even study the guy, and that hate him. Like the same people who hate Trump without studying him. Exactly the same mania. Russia is not a problem. Russia should be part of Europe and America. It was Obama who was trying to encroach against what was agreed between Gorbachev and Reagan, that what used to be the Soviet Union or parts of the Soviet Union should not have any atomic weapons or weapons of destruction against Russia. They were trying to put it in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Again, I repeat, the Crimea always belonged to Russia. The Russian Black Sea Fleet is in the Crimea. Most of the people in the Crimea and in the eastern part of Ukraine are Russian, and they voted Russian.
So you think the West needs to get over it?
They should commit suicide before they do anything. Yes, because the greatest threat, which will come next in your discussion, is Islam, starting with Iran. First, Islam. Second, China. Third, nothing. Russia is not a threat.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, let's keep going here. Let's stay on Moscow a moment. We'll come back to Iran in just a moment here. You speak about Crimea. Let's talk about that a moment here. When they made the strategic decision to get in there, and again, you have to remember that the Russian Black Sea Fleet is right there in Crimea. I mean, that's where they're housed. And so when they made the decision to take over that whole area in, as you say, eastern Ukraine and in the Crimea Peninsula there and all, that's still being held against them, because you hear a lot of politicians who continually say they need to give that back. Now, they're never going to give that back. I mean, it's a joke. So the question is, Dennis, what do you think about, let's bring you in and talk about this Crimea. When do we ever get over that? Or do we ever get over that? And do you accept where IQ puts out there and says, listen, this is about as much of Russia is, the people there he's speaking about, their whole heritage is Russian. What do you think about that?
Well, culturally, that area of Crimea is primarily a Russian. They are Russians, okay? The thing about this whole situation is that Crimea became part of Ukraine at the fall of the Soviet Union. And one of the bad habits of the Europeans in general is that they tend to rewrite borders on an ongoing basis. And Europe has done this ever since a period in history known as the Hundred Years' War, where everything was decimated. And one of the ways that the Europeans keep from starting large wars is to have little ones. And the little ones usually involve moving a border here and there, with forces fighting with each other, and it kind of blows off steam. It's very much the same way that we had proxy wars during a Cold War with the Soviet Union, basically to blow off steam. So in Europe, that's kind of the way that they do it. And if you look at European history going all the way to the end of the Middle Ages, you know, this is kind of the stuff that happens. The problem here is that globalism in Western Europe started to spread eastward after the fall of the Soviet Union and started to beguile the former Warsaw Pact bloc countries to joining the European Union, and they've been expanding. Well, if you're a Russian and you see Western Europe expanding towards your border from the West, it looks very much like Napoleon and Hitler invading you again, all right? And it triggers a reaction on the part of the Russians, because they've gone through this before. Now, this is historical, cultural stuff that you just cannot ignore in what happens.
That's interesting. Russia's been on both sides of this, is what you're saying. I mean, they've been.
This is not something that has not happened before in the European theater. Mm-hmm. The difference now is that they're posturing against each other with the threat of bringing back theater nuclear warfare,
right?
Which is a very, very dangerous thing to do, particularly in a world that does not have a United States and a Soviet Union to temper the actions. Now it becomes the central part of the war, and that's very dangerous because, like I said before, the Europeans tend to hit each other with sticks every chance they get.
Yeah, yeah. This is interesting what you put out there right now. I want people to think a moment, because we're on this, the moment Dennis has just put out there, it's the precipice of, in other words, anything could happen at this point is what we're saying here. Again, Russia's been on both sides of this debate, this conversation. Let me go through a couple of points here, and then I want to get IQ to opine on this a moment here. And that is this now. All right, so Washington just withdrew from this treaty, if you will. It was an Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, the INF, as you know it out there, friends. This is kind of a Cold War era. This was back then. And they just, again, Trump just withdrew the Trump administration from that because they accused Putin of violating it. That's been building for some time now. Of course, the Kremlin says they're not violating that. They say that's not accurate, of course. Now, the pact itself had prohibited land-based missiles with a range of 310 to 3,400 miles, okay? So about 300 to 3,400 miles, which what that did, people, is that reduced the ability of both nations to be able to launch a nuclear strike at short notice. So that's kind of what that did. So all bets were off now. And remember, this is the work of Reagan and Gorbachev and all that whole era back there that's being sort of unraveled here at the moment here. Now, Putin went ahead and told his Security Council just a few days ago, in fact, that Russia would not stand idly by and that the United States talk of deploying new missiles in the Asia-Pacific region affects our core interest as it's close to Russia's borders, which is what Dennis was kind of speaking about a moment ago here. Now, enter in our Mark Esper, our defense secretary, if you will. He says that he's in favor of placing ground-launched intermediate-range missiles in Asia as soon as we can. Putin says, no way, he says, and he's not going to have that. And Romania, Poland, you know, he's not going to have it. He, in fact, said this. Let me read you his quote. All this leaves no doubts that the real intention of the United States in exiting the INF pact was to untie its hands to deploy previously banned missiles in different regions of the world. We have never wanted, do not want, and will not be drawn into a costly, economically destructive arms race. Now, we could talk a lot about that because they don't have the economics to fight a big war anymore. Russia is hurting economically. Their people are hurting as well. So, IQ, let's pick up from there now. And as you see, you know, Putin has reason to be concerned, clearly. We pull out the INF. Where are we going with this? What's the strategy ahead?
The strategy was from the very beginning when Donald Trump asked the question, what have we got to lose having a good relationship with Putin? He is right. He and Putin will get on like a house on fire. No question about it. In my mind, you must understand, I'm talking from my point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Russia needs America. America needs Russia. Europe needs Russia. Why? Because the greatest threat to all of them, mm-hmm. including China, will be and is Islam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they should not poster anymore. They don't need
IQ, let me interject weapons. Here with you a minute here. Now, on what you're saying right there, you're right. President Trump had said, his words exactly were this, and I'll quote them to you. He says, wouldn't it actually be wonderful if we could get along with Russia? Wouldn't that be nice? Now, that's the president's words right there.
Yeah.
But yet, that's, and you know, see, when you went initially with the early talk and said Obama, and see, I think the current Congress right now where we're at in the administration, Trump never had a chance with Putin or Russia because they made a mockery out of the whole thing. The DNC did with the whole dossier and that whole thing that blew up there in the Russia collusion. So he never really had a chance. And I think a lot of that is the current state of political, right now, it's the current politicians. I don't think it's Obama. I think it's where the Congress is right now and what they've done, and the DNC specifically, IQ, that have tainted this relationship so badly.
I agree with you, but that's not the answer. That shouldn't be the answer. They are failing, by the way, God willing, no question about it in my mind also. As long as the economy is ticking the way it is, come November 2020, Trump will have a landslide victory. Landslide. Take my word for it.
Well, it could. It could. It depends. As we see now, they're trying to impeach him out of office, Clinton. Let me go one step further here. I don't want to lose sight of this before we leave Moscow and get back up to 35,000 feet a moment here, gentlemen. And that is, IQ, the article you wrote there, what I thought was really super, Democrats, impeachment, and why Russia matters, that ran on America Out Loud. You can read that there, friends. Let me read you a couple of comments, IQ, that were said, and let's talk about these before we leave this area, IQ and Dennis. And a few tweets I want to give you here that were said back to that column I thought were fascinating. Mike on the right says, first and most important, is that the United States and Russia have a mutual agreement. It's called MAD, M-A-D. We know what that is. And he goes on to say, Islam would kill everyone on earth to satisfy their belief. Now, again, that's a tweet put out there, meaning that the mutually assured destruction was the mutual agreement we always had with Russia, whereas Islam would kill everybody. I'm sure that's a tweet you would agree with, IQ.
100% it's true. He's not exaggerating. The Imam, the 12th Imam of the Shia Muslims, will only come if you have Armageddon. What is Armageddon? The end of the world. A world war. They will not hesitate to blow up any country, any city on earth with atomic weapons, with gas warfare weapons, or with bacteriological weapons. I know it sounds ridiculous to talk like this.
Yeah.
But it isn't. In Syria, they accused the president of Syria of using gas against his people. He did not need to gas his people. It was his enemies who used it, and they accused him of it. And the Europeans fell for it all the way.
Wow. Wow. Well, let me say this. There was a follow-up to that tweet right there, Dennis, and let's pick up and opine on this. Rick says, that's a very smart point, Mike, speaking of Mike on the right, the tweet I just mentioned to you, most people don't know about the concept of mutually assured destruction. If one side attacks with nuclear, both will surely be destroyed. The Russians don't believe they'll go to heaven and get 72 virgins for doing it either. And you would say what, Mr. Santiago?
Well, seeing as I helped negotiate some of these treaties back in the 1980s, I would say that the Russians fully well understand what mutual assured destruction means. Here's the thing, that it's not mutually assured destruction between the United States and the Soviet Union that is at stake right now. What's at stake right now is the proliferation of intermediate range weapon systems. Mm-hmm. They are happening all over the world. They are not solely in the possession of the number of people that are joining this nuclear club is climbing.
That's right.
All right. And two of the nations that are joining the nuclear club are rogue nations. That's North Korea and Iran. What you're seeing now is the dynamic of nuclear warfare is changing from what it was in the 1980s, which is a polar between superpowers,
right,
to a multilateral matrix of conflicting interests that are all within 3,000 miles of each other.
Yeah, they're almost starting to treat it like conventional warfare.
It is, and that is the single most dangerous thing to this planet that could possibly happen, because once it starts, how do you stop it?
Yeah, yeah. No, everybody should be aghast right now with what Dennis puts out there right now. You hear the warning that he says. I mean, I just got the hibby-jibbies running up my spine here as you said that, because that's a big danger sign, people, is if they're starting to treat that as again, some sort of casual conventional warfare, then we're in a whole heap of trouble here, because we're talking about nuclear holocaust here in a way that we've never seen before, people. So one last comment. I want to not miss this other tweet here from Daisy. She says on that article from IQ Now, says, well, gives us something to think about. I do agree that Islam Muslims are our biggest enemy. So the American people obviously believe this, or at least a good part of them do here. They are slowly but surely infiltrating our government and sabotaging our culture. Will Sharia law prevail if we get a Democrat president? Scares the heebie-jeebies out of me, is what Daisy says there. Interesting. So now you see where some of the people are thinking, friends. You see where their thoughts are on all of this. IQ, just to opine quickly on Daisy's tweet there, please.
She is a genius. She's one of the few Americans who have an open mind. Mm-hmm. I said it on your program and on every talk show program in the United States of America. You must never allow Sharia to take root in the soil of America.
Right.
And the instant you do that, you are self-destructing. It's like getting the Ebola virus into your vein. Exactly the same thing.
All right. All right. Here's what I want to do, guys. Put your seatbelts back on. Let's get back up to 35,000 feet. I want to move on to Tehran, please, and get up to Iran there. And very interesting, because Tehran right now, some interesting things going on. Iran, folks, they are on fire, literally. There's also some other news on that I want to share with you in just a moment. The government has cut off the internet completely. They can't even communicate out of there. And yet, nobody is talking about it here in this country, because they're all infatuated with this impeach the president deal here. Wow.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, we join you back here, and as we venture to Tehran here, I want to talk about Iran and some of the politics going on there. Friends here, joined us back here, Dennis Santiago, IQ Al Razuli, two of my favorites here, as we kind of take a look at the biggest threat here. Now, we just covered some pretty good ground talking about Russia and Moscow, specifically with Putin and some of the threats there with the INF, the treaties, and as Dennis points out, you can't treat nuclear holocaust as conventional warfare and think it's okay. So that's the way of the world right now, people, but that should give everybody pause to pay attention. Let's talk about Tehran a moment here, and Iran as we dip back into those politics there. Now, it seems to me that with everything said about Iran right now, there's some very unusual things going on in that country right now, because the Iran's version of we the people are getting mighty, mighty pissed off. And, you know, when that happens and you get that inner protest where the people get out on the streets and, you know, government has a hard time holding the back. And, you know, as we've seen before with big governments, the people can speak very loudly, really loudly in just about any country. If they realize the power is typically with the people, the same thing as Venezuela people, if the people get together and they can literally take over a government, that's the power of any we the people. It always is. They can put a dictator out of business real quick here. So Iran's having some real problems here. Not only are all these protests and fires and really ugly protests are being put out there for, you know, and remember, now Iran is a country of about 80 million people, by the way, in Iran itself here. What's happening now is with this latest outburst here, these protests now started, Dennis, with fuel prices. It was all about a sharp increase in fuel prices. Now, this is a country that's supposed to be very rich in energy. Of course, they're having some troubles there. And now the internet connections have completely gone dark for the last 4 days. There's been no internet at all. They can't get online there whatsoever. And the people are livid. They're being cut off from families and friends and what have you. It's just a moment in time for Iran.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, the place is it's a basket case country at this point. All right. They've economic sanctions. It all goes back to regional adventurism, which is essentially the Persians wanting to create the Shia crescent that would span from the Indian Ocean all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. The head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard has spent, I don't know, the past 3-4 years all over the northern Middle East, including leading battles with ISIS as far away as Syria, which was really to create a pathway for a road that they could build out to the Mediterranean for economic purposes. And they have spent most of the country's treasure in terms of available spare cash on doing things like funding Shia militias in Iraq, funding activities in Syria, all the way out to Lebanon. And it's cost them a lot of money. In the meantime, they're getting sanctions because of all these actions, and they're basically out of cash. So what do? They're now at the point where, in order to fund the government and its activities at all, they got to raise oil price, or not oil prices, but fuel prices to consumers by 50%. And people the Iranian people can see through all this, right? And they've been complaining quietly, and now it's got to the point that they just can't take it anymore. They've started to riot, in their version. I mean, they're very peaceful riots for the time being, but what happened now is that the Iranians, the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, Qasem Soleimani, who had been helping the Iraqi militias put down the revolts in Iraq over lack of jobs, has had to pull his people back into Iran to put down his own people. And to hide it all from the world, they killed the internet. We need to bring this particular story out furthermore, because, you know, these are people rising up to save their own country. And right now we're kind of ignoring it.
Yeah, there's no press on this, just about anything. If anything, you'll find it on the 50th page somewhere if you're lucky. But it's certainly not a frontline story, but yet it's a major story, major ramifications. IQ, let's talk about this now with Iran. In your world of looking at this, I mean, Iran is the big bad boogeyman out in, certainly throughout the Middle East region and beyond that. They have tentacles of corruption and terrorist means all over the world. Is this a moment in time to bring Iran to its potential knees, or is this just another peck on the timeline and we just go by it?
I don't think it's a peck. They shot 4 rockets from Syria. I'm talking about the Iranians in Syria. Mm-hmm. I guess Israel in the Golan.
Yeah.
Israel retaliated.
Now, yeah, Israel wiped out a lot of their targets in Syria.
Retaliated, I didn't say how much, but they retaliated. What I'm getting at is this. This is not going to end. Iran under Khomeini in 1979 and until today had one single purpose declared publicly to the whole world, the destruction of Israel. This is not negotiable. Israel is not going to go down without a fight. Now, they have a problem, exactly what Mr. Santiago was saying. They have a serious problem that, by the way, they killed over 100 to 200 people already in Iran. Now, to distract attention and to make it a popular thing, so to unite the nation of Iran against Israel, they will start a war. And the war already started. I have absolutely no doubt that push comes to shove. Israel will retaliate against Iran, specifically on their territory.
Will push come to shove?
That's it. They will do it.
Do we see that moment of time happen? Will it happen?
It could happen anytime if the Iranians continue shooting rockets from Syria against Israel.
Do you see them continuing, or will they reel it in?
No, they won't reel it in. This is
so you Shia see this Islam. Happening then?
Yeah, Shia Islam. Look, you honestly believe the Muslims are good thinkers? They are strategic thinkers. They're not strategic thinkers, and I'm not generalizing. You read their history.
Yeah.
I'm not generalizing. They are not strategic thinkers. They are thugs. They invaded the Arabs in 635 AD and on. They invaded three continents, destroyed five civilizations. It's not good thinking.
Right. Well, their purpose is not more strategic and long-term like China is, and we'll talk about China in the next chapter here. But their whole mode is to get to those virgins in heaven. It seems to be. So that's what makes them more dangerous, actually, which
exactly.
is what
date. That's why it's serious.
Right, right.
You see, a Russian knows if he dies, he dies.
Right.
There are no 72 virgins.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you die, in the Christianity world, if you die with those evil means, you're going to hell.
Okay. And right? Even if you go to heaven, there are no 72 virgins.
Well, that may be a version of hell, depending what that is like, huh? I guess. But let me get Dennis. I want his opinion on this, IQ, and let's listen to him a moment, because I don't know where he sits on this exactly. But, I think, Dennis, if I asked you who was the biggest threat, Russia or Iran, I think I do know what your answer is. You would say...
Oh, it's far more as far as destabilizing the world right now, Iran. Because Iran... Yeah. So the Iranians... And IQ's right. The Iranians are, for lack of it, they're a bunch of dumb shits. Okay, and
truth
and,
be told,
I mean, here's the bottom line, right? They have an enormous internal domestic problem brewing inside their country, and in order to cover it up, they shut off the internet. They have also been trying to drag other countries into attacking them. Through all kinds of things, meddlesomeness in the Persian Gulf, they support the Houthis and are giving them cruise missiles and attacking Saudi Arabia. They're trying to incite the Israelis. And what are they really trying to do? What they're trying to do is they're trying to get somebody to be dumb enough to react. To their provocations, so that they can go turn to their people and go, see, we told you that the outside world was dangerous and hated us, and you need to support us in our quest to build this great Shia Crescent dream of ours. And the bottom line is the United States, all right, as well as the Russians, are. Very carefully, basically going, we're not going to react to Iran. And the worst possible thing for the Iranian regime right now is they go off and do this stuff and everybody goes, we don't care. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, they shot down one of our drones. And what did we do? You know, we thought about going after them and basically said, no, the better reaction is to say, basically, you know, we're the United States, we're a rich country. We'll just build another one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it frustrates the Iranian leadership because they think on such a small scale of tit for tat
that
they don't understand the game that they're playing with the other nations of the world.
That is so well said. By golly, that is so well said. IQ, you, I am certain you must agree with that.
Of course. I mean, I said they're small-minded. They're not strategic.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody with two brain cells of logic, they think they can destroy Israel. How are they able to think like that? Israel is a nuclear power, whether she agrees, declares it, or doesn't declare it. Right. According to anybody you want to talk to, they have at least 200 nuclear weapons.
Here's a big question for you now. Based on what Dennis just put out there as well, I want to ask you something. Do they bite the bullet? Do they react to Iran? Because I think, to put that in perspective with what Dennis just shared with us, when you're talking about Iran, Iran is like the big bully on the schoolyard. They're the ones that sit over there and taunt you. And he's so right when he says, and you know, I want to say something else to you both. This, again, I don't want it to be lost on anybody, people. For all of the hoopla and controversy that was put on President Donald Trump about being a warmonger, that he was going to be the first to go to war and all. You remember that, people? You guys remember that? The brilliance, and I just don't think it should be lost on any of us right now, the brilliance of the Trump administration to stay out of that when everybody accused him of the direct opposite of Iran, being that they were taunting the world, and they were certainly taunting the United States in a big way with all those activities that were happening in the Gulf there. And yet we stayed. But my question to you, IQ, is can Israel also keep their hands off of that? Because Israel has some real conflicts going on internally there right now. What do you think?
Israel is fighting for her existence. United States is not fighting for her existence. It doesn't matter how much the Iranians threaten the United States or America. She can snuff them out within 20 minutes. Forget 24 hours. So if you're using nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Israel has existential threat. It's a different level of threat.
Yeah, many of our listeners would disagree with what you just said, and I know you didn't say that in the way, but many people would argue back with you, IQ, that the United States is fighting for our existence right now because we are under such threats here. I don't think you would necessarily disagree with that, but you're just talking in the short term here, right?
Yes, but you're fighting for your existence against the Democrat Party. not because of Russia or China or even Iran.
Well, that's bad, though. That's internal. Hold on, brother. That's even worse. That's internal.
Internal, exactly.
Yeah, that's the Trojan horse that could, you know?
Hey, man, a Democrat gets in, you know, we'll raise gas prices by 50% and see what happens here.
There you go. Have the same protest and all that going on. It's an interesting
probably,
point.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, and people would react in some way when we're being bamboozled in the way we're being bamboozled. Pretty amazing. Interesting. IQ, I want to get your thought on one other thing before we get back up to get over to Beijing, please. And it's this. With the current news here that's happened here in the last couple of days now, the breaking news with Netanyahu being charged now, of criminal charges and bribery, extortion, and all the things. In fact, it's the same kind of laundry list of things they're trying to get Trump on, actually, in a whole different way, in a warped way of looking at it, people. But the attorney general's just charged him out there. They can't seem to get an election together. They're almost saying, do we have to have another election? Him or Gantz can't seem to get the right coalition together to govern Israel, and this is a real problem internally there. Talk to me on what's going on there, please.
It is a disaster.
Yeah.
The whole electoral system in Israel has been a disaster. Why? Because you have so many parties. Some of them are insignificant with two or three seats who can later on decide the projection of what the state should do. Unbelievable. I don't know. They have to change the system. How they will change it, I have absolutely no idea.
It's the most confusing brand of politics I've ever seen, just about, huh?
Well, it's the worst. It's absolutely the worst. Can you imagine three elections in 1 year?
I know. We can't even get one right here.
Never had that.
Yeah, no, I know. We can't even get two political parties in one election here, right, buddy? Come on. You know?
But I wanted to ask Dennis. Dennis, what do you think Israel should do?
Well, I mean, you know, first, I mean, I have, whenever I see this stuff, I have a very funny reaction, which is, which goes back to trying to have a nice conversation with my Jewish friends in New York. Have you ever tried to get three Jews to agree on anything?
No.
It's impossible. It's impossible, right? And
I want to explain why they got so many parties then.
It's a multi-party system.
Wow.
And it's tumultuous. Now, do not mistake the tumultuousness of Israeli domestic politics with Israel resolved to survive.
That's good. That's good.
Those are two completely different things. And on the survival part of Israel, you know, they are working with Saudi Arabia. They're working with Egypt. I mean, you know, Egypt is the country that is attempting to figure out a way to stem the rockets that are hitting Israel. I mean, there's a lot more cooperation going on in the Middle East right now. And by the way, at the orchestration and encouragement of the United States of America by the Trump administration to hold the line against Iran and stay calm, right? That's nothing's changing that. The domestic tumultuousness of Israeli politics is as grand a theater as the domestic politics of the United States.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yiddish. It's all in Yiddish, of course. Yeah,
all in Yiddish. That's right. We speak Yiddish here as well. Hey, IQ, Netanyahu, what happens to him? Does he make it? Is he done?
It's possible, yes. Yeah. It's possible.
But it looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you never know. Let's have a third one and see what happens. You never know. I mean, the guy has survived enormous pressures. Exactly like with Trump. That's why he and Trump got on very well. Exactly the same type of enemies.
Yeah, we'll see if Netanyahu has any tiger in him. He may get nine lives at this point. He seems to be headed that way, people. But anyways, let's get back up to 35,000 feet. And I want to get over to Beijing a moment here as we can here and talk about China and that part of it and their threats here. Really interesting conversation here with Dennis and IQ, friends. We'll be back, more Voice of a Nation, after this pause here.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Our relationships with China, the United States, is definitely being stretched right now. And a lot of it's because President Trump has pushed the envelope to try to correct decades of wrongdoing and a system of unfair economics that have tilted the relationship of China and the United States. Now, let me put in perspective for you people something here. So China, as of Monday, has a population of 1,435,904,568 Chinese. How do you like that, people? That's a lot of people. That is the most populous nation on the planet here. So we're talking 1,000,000,004 something, right? Okay. In perspective, I told you up front that Russia has a population of 145 million, okay? And I shared with you as well that Iran has, what, about 80 million, I think I said, right? About 80 million. Yeah, about 80 million. And now put that in perspective. The United States, well, we have a population here of 329 million. Just under 330 here. And you know what's interesting, another interesting perspective for you friends about the United States with that population and being the world superpower here. We've only got just over 4% of the world's population. So we're obviously not having enough babies here in the U.S. We're only, again, just over 4% of the population, and yet we carry that economic might. Now, put that in perspective, people, and then come talk to me about American exceptionalism, and I'll have that conversation with you any day of the week here, okay? All right. Having said that, let's talk about Beijing now. So interesting developments going on there with Hong Kong right now and with the trade deal. So China right now is demanding that President Trump veto the Hong Kong Human Rights Bill that has been overwhelmingly approved by Congress. They have been really, really out there in saying, you better not go along this way here, Mr. President. Interestingly, there's a balance of what's happening with the trade right now. The trade has been making progress. There's been a lot of talk about getting a phase one done. There are still some things to iron out. And of course, with the Chinese, you never know how that's going to work, really. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, he warned just a few days ago here, friends, that the United States and China were in the foothills of a Cold War and could be headed toward a conflict worse than World War I. We've got this threat of what's going on in Hong Kong, the push on that, and now with the economics and the trade deal, there's a lot to say about that. They've tried to restrain themselves and keep their military back. But it's getting really hot and heavy. You've seen what's going on in the university there and throughout the streets there in Hong Kong. In the meantime, this trade deal over here, Congress, we're inflicting our business into China's business in Hong Kong. Xi comes out and says, you better watch it. Henry Kissinger warns, we're in trouble here if we don't be careful. Where are we headed here with Beijing?
Kissinger is right. Whether it was like World War I or not is irrelevant. Congress should not have done what they did. Who are they to decide human rights in China? They're not exterminating Hong Kong. They are trying to stop them from having their freedom. Well, China is not a democracy. It's an autocracy. Whether it's communist or not is irrelevant. It's an autocracy. They cannot afford to have freedom in Hong Kong and no freedom on China. And I'm surprised, honestly, very surprised that they haven't yet interfered physically. I was expecting a repeat of Tiananmen Square. And you know what? It might still happen. Security of the Communist Party of China, they cannot afford to have such freedom. They can't afford it. Whether we like it or not is irrelevant. And as you said, there are 1.4 billion. That's a huge number.
When Britain gave that back in that lease, Britain had a lease on the thing for 99 years. When they gave that back in the 50-year deal, we all kind of knew what was going to happen. Like you just said, it wasn't really a revolutionary thought, IQ, that Hong Kong's best days were behind it, that it would become part of the China oppressive regime that it is. We all knew it, right?
Correct. Even Taiwan. It's a matter of time. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to be realistic.
Right.
I mean, would the United States of America go to a nuclear war with China over Taiwan? The answer should be no. In fact, the answer should be no, even with Korea and Japan. Why? I said it many times on your show. Had either Korea, South Korea, and Japan, or together, said to the North Koreans, if you shoot one more rocket, we shall go nuclear. I'll tell you what, China would never have allowed Kim Jong-un to go nuclear, full stop. But they didn't do that. They should have done it. They didn't do that.
Yeah.
The threat alone would have been enough.
Wow. It's fascinating.
What do you think, Dennis?
I don't think there was any way to stop Kim Jong-un from going down his path. That was the only way he was getting money. He was using his nuclear development program as a way to tantrum to the rest of the world to get concessions from both the South Koreans and the United States and anybody else he could get a hold of. And I think he became addicted to it. He may have scared himself a little bit. And now that he's on the precipice of actually having nuclear capability, he's almost operational. And that changes the game, because at that point, the world will treat you differently when you actually join a nuclear club with a credible force. So we will see. I think the efforts by the Trump administration to convince the North Koreans to denuclearize are probably the best option the world could hope for at the moment. Denuclearization has happened before. South Africa denuclearized. All of the other member states of the former Soviet Union all denuclearized. Russia was the only one that kept nuclear weapons. And so there is precedent for pulling back. Kim Jong-un may or may not be the easiest guy to negotiate with, but you know, we've got his attention. I'd like to talk about Hong Kong for a second, in that I really see when you look at what's happening in Hong Kong, I think its glory days have passed. I think what is happening now, and what you're going to see over the next 10 to 15 years, is that all of the economic power that was Hong Kong as the gateway to China is going to dissipate, because there are now many more economic centers in China that can take on that role. And so it's no longer a unique thing for the Chinese government to have as a jewel. And that, I think, is the thing that the people in Hong Kong don't quite get. They are now expendable.
It's a perspective that we need to look at, because when you look at the journey of Hong Kong and where they're at right now, like I said, I knew what was going to happen here. I'm not surprised by any of this. But Dennis, in relation to what IQ just put out there in regards to that, again, back to China's patience, they have shown, and you've said this on Viewpoint before and other programs here, that they have shown a great amount of patience, haven't they?
They have. And I don't think it's patience based on being nice. I think it's
patience. We're on the side of Hong Kong here. Let's be clear, everybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so the people in the economic and trade part of Hong Kong have relatives in the economic and trade part in the rest of China. And the last thing the Chinese government wants is the discontent in Hong Kong to spread to all of the rest.
That's the bigger problem right there.
Economic cities. Because if that happens, then they do have to use force and clamp down on their entire middle class.
Well, as you said, they're dispensable. I mean, they don't care.
Yeah. I mean, you know, clamping down on your middle class in China is a time-honored tradition for the last 10,000 years. Every dynasty's done it. And usually by killing all of them. You know, so there's precedent for that in Chinese history.
That's how they kept the control.
Xi Jinping doesn't want to do it because he understands that it also cuts back on his ability to be a world power.
Would send them back a long way. You're right.
A very long way.
But it's a whole new world today. I mean,
You know, I have to appreciate how complex the guy's problem is, because you know what? Here's the thing. Back to your population thing, you know, like a tiny problem or a problem in the United States, we got 300 million people, right? So like if like a third of our population gets antsy, like, you know, like 100 million people, let's say all the Democrats all got antsy, you know, it's a problem. But multiply that.
They are antsy.
Multiply that by five times. I mean, a tiny problem in China would be the entire United States going nuts.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of people there, but it's also a lot of mouths to feed. And with that, they need to purchase more agricultural product from the United States. And that gets back into this whole trade deal. Do you see phase one of the trade deal, Dennis, coming to fruition?
I do, basically because I believe that the Chinese have a famine problem that is
exactly brewing.
They have something called the army worm moth that has invaded the southern parts of China, where all of the
they've lost a lot of agriculture because
the family farms are there,
and
basically if those family farms collapse, you have a famine problem.
That's right.
Coming in from the north, they have in North Korea they have a swine flu problem, and if that comes in, then you got a livestock problem coming in from the north. The biggest threat to China right now isn't the United States; it's Mother Nature.
Right. Well, but let me ask you this. Does that override the fact that they prefer that President Trump not get reelected?
I think it does for the time being
if that's the case, then there will be a trade deal if that's the case.
I believe there will be. And I believe there will be a trade deal out of necessity. I think the problem they're having now is as they get to the edges of the trade deal, then you've got that middle class of not just Chinese mercantile class, but also United States mercantile class that make money off of this trade stuff, that are starting to infect the edges of the negotiations. And that's what's slowing things down. But the core of it, which it has to do with, we need the agricultural products of the United States, and we're willing to give up something for it is solid.
All right. Let me now, while we're still here in Beijing a moment here, IQ, I want to take a look here a moment with you and say this. Just recently, a few weeks ago, I heard some comments from President Trump, IQ, speaking about China, Russia, and himself, and our country, the United States, talking about the fact that maybe it's time for the three of us to get together and talk about world peace, talk about nuclear, come up with some sort of an agreement. Now, this was overshadowed in the media, as I say, because the media has an agenda, and their agenda is to, and that's where the DNC takes their, they take the, their marching orders from the media. It's the media who's complicit here in all ways, shape, and form here that shaped all these policies, quite frankly. That's why we got to change this. And so I ask you, isn't that part of the new world order that we need to get into, IQ, where if we're going to have success here, and as Dennis says, keep some of these other ranks where we keep nuclear war becoming from conventional warfare, if we're going to keep some of these countries back from pursuing that, then shouldn't there be a bigger agreement and these big countries get together and try to really, and couldn't that possibly happen if everybody would back off and let Trump do his job and he does get reelected, as you just suggested he would in the last segment there? Do you think that's a possibility, or is this a fairy tale?
No, it shouldn't be a fairy tale. We are dealing with people who are practical people. Putin is practical.
Exactly.
Xi is practical, and Trump is practical. There is absolutely no reason for them not to sit down and solve the problem. Because if they work together, nobody on earth can go against them. I mean, literally, no power on earth can go against them.
Could that come together with China, Russia, and the United States with what Trump had kind of suggested? But
yes, as a matter of fact, one of the things that I remember when at the very end of the Cold War, we did a whole bunch of scenarios of you know, how the world could be stabilized. And one of them was called the Northern Alliance scenario. And that was an alliance of the three great powers, the United States, Russia, and China, where by trading with each other, using the peace dividend from the Cold War, we would help each other's economies stabilize, and from that build better relations, and from that build a basis for global stability that was based on cooperation as opposed to a carefully orchestrated set of mutual assured destruction.
Amen.
Tensors, that would be a better way to go. People all thought that was something that should be explored. It failed to go forward because the Soviet Union collapsed on us. Mm-hmm. But you know, here we are again. We got a chance to do it. We got three pragmatic guys that I think have the right mindset to do it. And I think we ought to try for it.
Well, listen, global stability, that's a big deal. That's something we all should be reaching for. And so, friends, the pilot has put his light on, Dennis, IQ. Thank you both here. But we've got to put the tray tables up and get this program done here. Big thank you, as always, to IQ, Al Rizzulli, Dennis Santiago. Friends, follow us here back, AmericaOutloud.com. A lot going on back at the home base there. And join us there. And also on the weekends for a Viewpoint this Sunday is our big news magazine. You'll catch on Sundays, of course. Thank you again for being part of the journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.